This is Idaho Pulse on iRadio, where we don't just talk about the future, we're building it one conversation at a time. This is Idaho Talk Radio, IRDO.
Welcome to IdahoPulse.org with your host, Tea Party Bob. Today, we are going to get away from politics and talk about religion in America, where it has been and where it is going, and to help us discern what happened and what is happening in religious circles today, we've invited Pastor Matt Henry, who happens to be the pastor of my church, Friendship Celebration in Meridian. So welcome to Idaho Pulse, Pastor Henry, and thank you for joining us today for an important discussion. And let's start off with where you think we are today in religion and how people are looking at religion today.
Well, good to be with you, Bob. Thanks for this opportunity. Where are we at today? It's an interesting question to start with versus where we've been. You know, I think in some ways we're getting back to the basics of just what church is and what it means to be, what it means to acknowledge God in our daily life. Whereas some people might want that as a separate piece, like, okay, compartmentalized, or is it really meant to affect and impact every part, every day of our lives? Which I think is, the latter is the better view, right? While we stick to the basics, of course, there's truth. There's an unchanging truth. That's the central premise, right? To the Bible, to God's word, God doesn't change. When you think about how much our world has changed in the last, well, you could go far back as you want, 10 years, 20 years, or 50, 60, 70. And yet God's people have always found a way to trust God and to follow his lead.
Let me give you some quick history, because I've been working on this for quite some time. I talk about it frequently on the radio. You know, since you're not quite as old as me, let me give you and the audience a short history of religion from the 1950s.
You're tough to catch up to, Bob.
Present day. You know, if you look at a chart in history, religious activity from the 1950s, which is when I was growing up, you'll find that during the post-war baby booming period of the 50s, there was a revival in religion, and some people considered it the third Great Awakening. So then came the societal changes of the 1960s, which included the questioning of religious institutions and, of course, the Vietnam War. And I know for me, religion became very important, especially when I found out I was going to wind up serving in a duty station in Southeast Asia. So you can see my understanding and why it was important to me to be in a religious state and to know who God was and, you know, the potential that you don't know whether you're going to return or not. But by the end of the 75, end of the war in 75, you know, there was a decline in religion. It stopped for a period there, and we saw a resurgence into Christianity. So over the next 15 years, religion once again declined, and it was a much sharper decline from the 60s and 70s. You know, church attendance and prayer were less frequent, and the number of people with no religion or said they had no religion grew. So fewer people say religion is important to them in their lives nowadays. In the 90s, there was a resurgence of religion when 90% of U.S. adults actually identified as Christians. But today, about two-thirds of the adults identify as Christians. So with that history behind you, give me your opinion as to where we are and what's happening.
Okay, so there's been instances of revival and pickups, but overall, the trend is definitely in decline. I don't think anybody can dispute that. And I'll just share with you some statistics of my own. This is from Reggie McNeil. He wrote a book called Present Future and a DVD resource that went with that. So even that is kind of dating it right now, DVD. But it came out early 2000s in that sense. And he was talking about generations, and he went right down the line. And I'm always, first of all, I'm always skeptical of people who claim affiliation or identity as a Christian. You know, what does that mean versus who's actually an active participant in a congregation? And what does active mean anyways? That's a whole nother question. But let's just assume they were telling the truth. He went right down the generational line. And so if you think about the seniors and builders and that generation, those generations really aren't with us anymore. They've largely died off, but about 60% of society claimed, you know, Christian identity and church affiliation. So whatever happened there between those two generations was transferred. It was copied over from one generation to the next. You get to the boomers, and that percentage fell to 40%. And then from the boomers to the Xers, it went to 20%. And from the Xers to the millennials, it went to 10%. Now, I haven't seen Reggie McNeil do Gen Z or and whatever, you know, what comes after the millennials, but you know, it's not good. You know, forget the business of faith or spirituality or anything. If you were to just look at that from a purely a marketing perspective, you would say this is not sustainable. And so, yes, there is an overall decline. And I think I know a couple of reasons why that is, or at least people have identified this that makes sense to me. And that is, there's probably two big shifts here, shifting from modern thinking to postmodern. That's one. And I think the other reason is just the breakdown of something as basic as the family, as integral to our society.
How do you define modern and postmodern?
Yeah. Okay. I'll define it this way. Modernism is based on the idea that there is foundational truth, that there are rules and norms, that these things should not be flouted. And postmodernism is going to say, well, truth is what you make it. It's very subjective. So modernism has an objective truth. Postmodernism is subjective. So it's individualistic. It's relativistic. It can be whatever someone makes it. And it's also a little bit like going through the cafeteria. You can pick and choose and put whatever you want on your plate and on the tray. And it doesn't have to match. It's okay. It's whatever someone makes it. So you want, for example, if someone's building a plane, you want a modern minded think person building a plane. You want it to fit and be precise and accurate and all of that. Another hallmark of modernism, and this kind of works with the 50s and all, you know, you think of, you know what I compare it to? Like, it's like McDonald's. You can go anywhere you want and you get the same thing. It's standardized. That's really the key word, standardized. It's from one place to the next. And even from church, you would say from one place to the next, you're going to be getting the same message. That's very much a modern mindset.
Would that be a modern mindset? Would that be going back to, say, the 1962 era and forward?
Yeah, that's where you're.
And there's a reason I asked this question. Because 62 is when they took religion out of schools.
Yeah, that would definitely be part of it. Sure. You're taking away that foundation. I think the 50s were like the high point, the high water mark for modern thought, which is kind of interesting. They were the high mark for the church as well. And it seems to be all this questioning or undoing of the, particularly the church as an institution, But I think it really has more, it has as much to do with the family too, because you just don't have that structure or order that you need as a society to hold things together. So those are some big societal shifts. They didn't happen overnight, but we've seen them happen over these last few generations. Now, what's interesting is we could talk about this new generation, and what they're looking for is the very same thing that we have, actual, like, authentic community, relationships. I mean, they need something. They want something that's real. I think the part of the reason why the institutional church has had such a decline is because they've been, you know, especially the younger generation, they're very distrustful of any institution, not just the church, any institution.
Why is that?
Well, they've been marketed out of their minds. They see either an ulterior motive, or sometimes just downright corruption or hypocrisy.
You credit that to the change in social media and the ability to have these instantaneous communications, TikTok and Facebook and what have you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So there's no shortage of information. They could download the anything, any book, anytime, anywhere. And what's lacking is the wisdom to make sense of it. How does it all hold together? You know, it's really a question of worldview. What's the worldview has changed? Who's the center of things? As you know, I think modernism, back to that, would say there is a higher power. We don't need to go into too much detail, but at least most people would say, yeah, there's a God. Where postmodernism might say, I don't know if there's a God or not. Or maybe even more individualistically, there is a God and it's me. I can do whatever I want. See, there's no boundaries there. I'm defining my own morality along the way. Is there a right or wrong? They would determine that as they go.
Do you credit some of this change to the education that our children have been getting in public schools for the last, 30, 40 years? Without the religious background.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't have a foundation, if you take God out of the equation, I mean, God's the one that holds it all together. If there is no God, there is no basis for morality. There really isn't. There is no right or wrong. So do what you want and get away with what you can. And that's kind of what you're seeing out of, I would say, portions of society today. No genuine ownership of responsibilities, and a lot of finger pointing. You know, no one's really willing to accept responsibility for their own actions.
Well, as you know, I'm a political animal, and I have to say that what I have seen in the last 15 to 20 years has been a shift in the fact that we have two different aspects of people in our country. Those who live in the big cities, those who do not live in the big cities, the blue states, the red states, and it goes back to liberalism versus conservatism. And those that are liberal seem to have less of a religious philosophy or background, and they feel that they have to stay away from Christianity because that is in the forefront of the conservative movement that's been going on.
So here's what I'll say about that, Bob. It used to be that your faith determined your politics.
Okay.
But now it's so polarized. Your politics determines your faith.
That's exactly what I was getting to.
That's a problem. That's a huge problem. And so you realize, what's the source of truth? Is it a political agenda? Is that the source of truth? A platform? Is that what we're following now? Or are we following, like, God, his word, and, you know, the commandments, for example? That's a huge problem. And actually, it's problems for the church, too, because there are churches that have, I think, abdicated the authority of Scripture in favor of the winds of the culture in politics and followed that instead. And that's a great sorrow I see that I have when churches go that direction, because the truth, again, this is very objective, but you know, God doesn't change. The truth of God's word doesn't change. Our world changes. Of course it changes. Can the church change other things? Yeah, and it should, but we never change the message. There's a lot of other things that we can talk about what needs to change in the church, but Jesus is still Jesus and the truth doesn't change.
Well, you know, I like to take this back to the Roe versus Wade decision that permitted us and women to kill literally 60 million babies. And today that has changed and it has done a complete reversal. Although they can still do this, they're doing it with a pill rather than mechanically. However, they're still doing it. So it brings to mind, has religion had any effect on them at all? And it appears to me, in many cases, it has not.
Well, I know that religion is there and it continues to serve a need in terms of, even after the fact, of counseling and forgiveness and helping women through post-abortive women through grief and all sorts of the trauma of it all. I'm not sure what else to say to that, Bob, except that if you were to remove religion entirely, think how much worse it would be if it were gone altogether.
Oh, I don't disagree with you. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So there is a lot of good that we can do from, just in terms of being salt and light in our communities. There's no shortage of opportunity to go forward with our message of hope and forgiveness, love. The world needs the church, that's for sure. And I just want the church to understand it has a really unique role in our society and not to sell out for the sake of being perhaps more relevant or accepted. We're not meant to be accepted, really. We're meant to be different, weird. You know, we're elect exiles, aliens in this world, if you will. So,
Have you found, I've been going to Friendship Celebration for, I know, nigh on to 20 years now. Have you found a difference, even since the COVID pandemic, in the attitude of people about religion and about church attendance? Because, I don't get to see it because I do it from my home here because it's a little hard to get down there on Sundays.
Yeah. What COVID did was it affirmed the importance of gathering physically. We realized there's no substitute for in-person presence, which is actually what the church is always meant to do. Gather. We gather in Jesus' name. And so that kind of affirmed our core function of gathering. We realized that while online is good for those that need it or can't otherwise gather, it's a nice alternative, but it's still not the same thing.
I agree with that.
Yeah, it's just not the same thing. And I think the illustration I would use on this is like you buy a bunch of grapes from the store, and there's always some grapes that fall off and they get they're at the bottom of the bag and they don't last as long. So I think about the church. There are some people that, you know, just never came back. They were casualties in this whole COVID mess and they fell away from the fellowship and they haven't returned. Others took their time in returning. I felt like I wanted to get out like a big gong. I felt like we should like just hit this gong every time somebody came back. It's like, yay, victory. But, you know, it's everyone took their own time with it, but it's something that I still don't think we've recovered from fully. There was a shaking out, or maybe another illustration, if this is a better picture, is thinking like a burning fire and coals stay hot when they're in the flame. But if they're out of away from the flame, you know, they will die off. They will cool out and lose their heat, or you would say. So I just, the importance of staying together, coming together, is integral to our identity as God's people today. And that's always been the case. I don't care if you're the early church meeting in homes, the underground church, the institutional church, on Main Street, it doesn't matter. You gather. That's otherwise, you're more vulnerable, really, if you're by yourself. It's not, there's a vertical, you know, God, me, yeah, but the horizontal is between each other, one another.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, politics played a part in that change that took place. And I say that because they closed churches, they closed restaurants, they closed just about everything. When you don't have that closeness with people and that gathering, I think it changes your mind in many ways. Did I need it in the first place? And do I miss it now? Mm-hmm. And I think that's when a lot of people made the decision either to return or not to return to a church that they had been going to for quite some time. And that concerns me because, you know, our country was built on Christianity. I mean, that's our forefathers literally built it that way. Whether they were all from the same religion or different religions, that was the cornerstone of this country.
You have the Judeo-Christian ethic. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think what many have tried to do in the political arena for years, they've been trying to change that. They've been trying to move us away from that. And all of a sudden, in the last, I don't know, maybe 8 to 12 years, I have seen that start to shift back. Aside from the COVID incident, I'm starting to see more of a shift that way now. People that I meet who will talk about Christianity that normally I would not be able to have a conversation with. Mm-hmm. I think that's coming back into play. And again, that may have something to do with this this movement, and I guess it's to the conservative values and away from the liberal values that people have been looking at for quite some time. And I have to go back, you know, to the Obama period and even Bill Clinton prior to that when they were president. Religion was different. Religion was looked at differently then.
Yeah. Let's go back even further than that. I think the reason why the church in the course of my life, and certainly in the course of yours, the church experienced a crisis, an identity crisis, and in this society of ours, because there was so much change from, let's go 60s and 70s, the church, you know, those are really difficult years for our nation and for the church and, the challenge to those in power. Okay, so I believe the church has moved from the center of society to the fringe of society. That's what we've seen. And it went from, in other words, from being a cultural insider to a cultural outsider. Now, what's interesting about being a cultural insider is that you have influence, you have sway. People respect the opinion of church leaders. You can shape certain issues, or even elections or things like that, to some degree. Well, what does the church say? You know, it used to be if the church was against something, I don't know, maybe like a law on drinking or something, you know, then it wasn't going to happen in that town. Well, you just look today, there's less authority, that the church has less sway, less input. We're now cultural outsiders, and we don't have as much influence. Now, that is, you might look at that as a bad thing, but I actually think the church has always done its best when it's in the minority. That weirdness that we're not meant to be, we're not meant to have control so much as, I mean, God's the one that has control and he just wants us to be faithful. So let that be our influence. But going from cultural insider to cultural outsider. Now, along the way, here's where the identity crisis comes in. the church was searching for a place to belong, to feel like it could do good again. And it took the responsibility, I believe, the God-given responsibility to parents, that parents had to raise and disciple their own children. The church took that away from them because the parents didn't know how to do it. And so the church stepped in and said, oh, hey, we'll do it. We'll do it. We'll instill all the spiritual formation. We'll be responsible for that. So as in essence, spiritual formation was outsourced to the experts, and it went away from the home and it went into the institution of the church. And so, well, now you got things like, huh? Worship and Sunday school and, you know, whatever programs churches could come up with to help meet that need. But in the process, we took away that core parental responsibility.
Which is not unlike what's happened in our public schools.
Yeah. Any institution. No, that's a very good point. Government should not do the job of family.
Right.
In general. Because government is not going to do a good job. The government cannot love like a father and a mother can love. You know, and so I think the church fell for that one in its own right because it just wanted to be relevant again. And in that was a disservice to the family, the home, and itself, the church, and then the mission at hand. And I think finally what we're getting back to now is realizing that and say, okay, God is not just a thing over here. God is over all our life. And we need God in our homes. We need God talk happening there. We need conversation between parents and children. That's where it happens. It's not just on a Sunday morning kind of thing. So does that make sense? The cultural outsider.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Insider to outsider. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I see that has happened. You know, I look at my own children and my grandchildren, and I see how their values have changed. I have half of them who are very religious, and the other half, you know, I've got four of them, and the other half that they don't attend church, and nor do I think they care. Do they believe? Yeah, I do think they're believers. Mm-hmm. But there's that dichotomy of those who do and those who don't. And it's not much different than those who go to school and they go to public schools as opposed to those who go to private schools. And the difference in the learning abilities, the learning capacity, and I've found this true because I've visited a lot of the private schools around here and seen how they teach and what they teach. And I've seen the demeanor of the children in public schools very much different than the demeanor of those in private schools, similar to the way I see a lot of the children who attend church regularly and are part of the youth groups, as opposed to those who have no religious background or teaching at all.
Yeah.
It's almost a split right down the middle in many cases.
Well, that's just worldview. It's worldview is what it is. I mean, we're not talking about insignificant questions. Who am I? How did I get here? You know,
right.
And evolution, which has been, you know, taught through public schools and, well, even some private schools too, of course, that says a message that you're just an accident. You're nothing special versus, you know, the Christian message, which is no, you are a unique creation and you bear the image of God, and God's purpose and plan for you is entirely unique. And you see, you have inherent worth and that you can't earn or lose. It's an entirely different message. So it changes how we see each other. It changes how we see ourselves. But I think, again, I think the message of Christianity is so beautiful, and it's exactly what we need. Just look at any issue. You look at racial tension, or you mentioned abortion earlier, and you're saying, well, no, look, this person is a human being who bears the image of God and has inherent worth because God says so. And that's so freeing and wonderful. It establishes a dignity in one another that apart from class or race or earnings or any association, all those labels that we have now, it just does away with all of that. And we begin to see each other as human beings again, which seems like we're losing that ability as a society just to acknowledge the humanity of other people.
And I think that in some ways, church has become very undignified to many of the people who, and I have to say this again, politically are liberal leaning and are not, they're not adjusting to the changes that take place. Once they seem to get into that syndrome, they don't seem to want to come back at all. And it's that continual push-pull from both sides that has this country in such a mess right now. And I don't know how you fix that. And I'm not sure that you can fix it with religion. I think it has to be fixed in another way. But I certainly haven't seen any movement aside from the conservative side back to Christianity, because I don't see that happening with the left at all.
If there's hope, I would say, like, let's look at Gen Z. You look at these millennials and Gen Zs. They're actually very open spiritually, very open and very desirous of having something real. And that's going to come. It might come, though, in a way that the church doesn't dictate. It can help facilitate. That's a different way of delivering the goods, if you will, of what God has. So it's a test for the church to see how flexible we can be. Creating a space where people can ask questions openly, where it's authentic and real. Oh, I'll just add this. I'm not sure this really fits in here exactly, but the one thing that these generations particularly have a distaste for is inauthenticity or hypocrisy. So the more real the church can be, or each person can be with their own faults instead of being fake and phony, the better. That's they're looking for that in particular.
Well, I don't mean to get back into the political arena, but I will tell you this, that
You can't help yourself.
I can't. Impossible. Yeah. But with the election of Donald Trump, we saw the Gen Zers go for him. Mm-hmm. And in big numbers, surprisingly, numbers that most people never expected to happen. And that tells you, yes, they are thinking, they are looking at their futures. They do have a good head on their shoulders. Maybe this, not in itself, but the way he has been leaning towards back to Christianity may actually bring that movement back. Maybe we'll see the fourth awakening.
Maybe. I'd certainly welcome it. I don't want, though, here's where I would say on that. I don't think any president is responsible for being the spiritual leader of any cause or moral harbinger of that. All I want out of my president, any president, is a humble attitude to know that there's a higher authority than him or her. And that's all I'm asking for, because there is. And to whom much is given, much is expected. So there's a humility. And as long as we're acknowledging God reigns over, you know, both realms, that's what I'm looking for. So, you know, Bob, maybe that's one place that we can affirm, like, it's helpful. I know some people might not think it, like, "In God We Trust" is a genuine or an important slogan. Some might look to take away "Under God" out of the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, you see that maybe more so from the left, definitely, than the right. But I think it's important that you hold on to those placeholders for God. I mean, as a acknowledgement that, yes, there is a higher authority. And as a result of that, the way we live matters, because one day we're going to have to answer to him. And that kind of accountability, that goes right back into the basic morality of how we live. How we live matters. Yeah.
Yeah, I have seen, and I think it's still very important that it's not just how you live, but how you die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've been there. I've seen this happen many times in my life. People have certain misconceptions about what's going to happen when this is all over and it's time to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have a good background in religious belief, I would imagine that many of them just kind of wonder what's going to happen. They don't have any clue.
I think most people would just say, I'll find out when I get there.
Which in other words, a train ticket to nowhere, we don't know where we're going.
Yeah, it's just too late. That's the great deception, you know. Whereas the Bible would say now is the day of salvation, you know, repent and believe. repent and be baptized. You'll receive the forgiveness of sins, the gift of the Holy Spirit. You know, all the immediacy. God is like, no, do it now. Don't put it off because by then it's too late. I just think if I were the devil, you don't have to convince someone that something's not true. You just have to distract them from actually taking action.
So. Well, you know, people who take action nowadays, you never know where they're coming from. That you may think they mean one thing when they actually mean something totally different. And I find that more in politics than anything else. I have to tell you that, you know, in my life, religion has played a very important part in the way I think, the way I act, the way I deal with other people in particular. Mm-hmm. We have less respect than we ever have for people in the past. And I see it just on the roadways when I come down to the valley. Nobody cares about how they cut you off. Everybody wants to give you the high sign, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and yell at you out the window for being a dumb butt. So, you know, that's kind of how I gauge what's going on, especially down in the more populated areas. I don't find the same thing up here, okay? I mean, although I did find people driving around with their windows closed and masks on during COVID, I don't find that same tenseness or that aggravation that is always seems to be inert in some of these people. I can't quite fathom it when I go down there. When I come back up here, it's almost peaceful to me.
Yeah, I understand. There is a pace of life. I think when you add a certain amount of people to a certain place, that you start, your view of other people changes. You start viewing them as almost like a competitor that's getting ahead or something like that. And how about we just go back to wherever you are, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. That seems to work. I'm not saying that's always easy in every setting, but just love your neighbor. That still applies, doesn't it? That sounds like a good message for today.
Well, I accept that, you know, I see a lot of that up here, except when the summer comes and then everybody from down in the valley comes back up here. And then things seem to change a wee bit. I guess we've lost, you know, when you get so many people gathered in one place, and I remember going into Meridian and living there when it was 30,000 people and leaving when it was over 100,000 people, and the difference that has taken place in the way people deal with each other. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that all the fences we have around us, which I was part of putting up for a number of years, is helping things. You know, that old saying from Robert Frost, good fences make good neighbors. Right. Believe me, that's not the case.
Well, it's a divided society. So I think there's wherever you can build community, that's what people are hungry for, like actual relationships, trust, actual security. I'll just say the other thing, it's with what you're talking about, Bob, it's not just the population increase, it's cost of living, it's working, both parents working, and, you know, breakdown of the family. There's so many stresses and pressures that our families are facing today that they were not facing as much in generations prior to this. And so they're just trying to hold it together. And I believe that if the church is looking to bless people today, it's help a family stay together. Help help marriages, help parents parent, help, you know, wherever there's brokenness, help bring some healing. I think that's a great calling for our church today, because the family is God's idea. That's just as marriage is God's idea. And I, you know, the devil's not, it's not even really hiding his strategy here. It's always to undo the things that God makes to drive separation and division. And the solution to that is, no, build relationships, build community. And that's where, in the, you get out of the me and into the we, into community.
That's you've seen, Friendship Celebration grow. You've been there for a time now.
Yeah.
Do you think that that growth is continuing and will continue?
It's going to continue because Idaho is a great place to live and people know it. I mean, they see it as a refuge from the rest of, well, other parts of the nation. And, you know, I grew up in Idaho, so Idaho Falls actually, went to school at U of I. So I try and emphasize my Idaho roots wherever I can, but, yeah, it's going to keep growing. And that's something that we just have to, acknowledge is happening and welcome people and be good neighbors.
You know, you have a school there for children that are not yet going ready to go to kindergarten. And
yep.
I'm curious as to how has that played a role in growing the church?
We love our preschool. It's pretty much at capacity right now. It's done so good under our new director, and our teachers are fantastic. And it helps me actually. If you could communicate theology to a three-year-old, you're doing, you know, it just to really break it down. And of course, they're so open, bless their hearts. It's an important ministry that we have for our community. It's actually something we're looking to expand. I can tell you, Bob, you might not know this, but we're going to be starting a kindergarten next year because people have responded so well. We have a good reputation in our community, and looking to do early childhood as well. So that is something that is in the works. We're pretty excited about it.
Boy, that's one positive thing I'm glad to hear.
Yeah.
You don't hear a lot about that going on around the state, but now that we're actually going to have some school choice here, even though it's very minimal, I think we're going to see more of the churches expand in that direction. It's needed so badly. Because if you take a look, and I guess we've seen the numbers very recently on TV, that we are number 40 in education around the world, but we're number one in the amount of money we spend per pupil or per student. Mm-hmm. That has to tell you that there's something wrong, see, in this world. And it needs to be changed. And maybe the fact that the churches will get more involved is the way this has to go, or the way it will go. Mm-hmm.
Well, our particular church body, we're Lutheran, right? So this is what we do. We teach, we build churches and schools. And actually, it's been a good way to, I think, serve the community and to help raise up, you know, you talk about discipleship, you know, instill those values and give them a foundation so they can make sense of things. Our schools are definitely a strong point. Go ahead.
I mean, personally, I see that we are at the beginning of what I would consider to be a new era. And that's coming from a guy that's been around for almost 80 years now. You see the changes that had taken place in the past, and you try to project some of those changes that you have seen in the past into the future. And that's kind of what I'm seeing is a revival in my own mind, okay, of Christianity around the country, not necessarily in the blue states, but we are seeing it very definitely in most of the red states. And we are seeing a change in the population structure, which has been very, very dynamic, especially here in Idaho, where people are starting to understand that it really does matter who runs your schools. It really does matter whether you have the churches available to go to. It really does matter who's running your community. And I think people are taking much more of an interest, not just in what their children are learning, but who's teaching it to them. And I think that they are going to start moving again back towards the churches, because that's where they find the truth is always there.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, you know, I hope that's the case. I hope that's what happens. And in terms of receiving people who are looking for that way of life, you know, for themselves and for their family, I want the church to be right there at welcoming and helping people along in their spiritual journey. But I what the church has to offer is just going to be one. It's not one of our strength isn't in force or power or you know, being cultural insiders like that anymore. And it shouldn't have ever been. The strength is always going to be in service and giving and blessing and, pointing to the truth. So that's the society needs the church. And I hope that we could see our role as being one to help hold things together and make for a better world. We're not looking to exile ourselves from the world. We're not looking to withdraw from the world. No, we're here for a reason. So let's do our job.
So essentially you're very positive on what's going on currently. And you see a brighter future than what we had in some of the past history.
I'm not going to say there aren't any challenges, because there certainly are, you know, just in a lot of congregations growing older, not younger. That's a problem, but it's also just God. I think God is always, he's faithful and he just wants us to trust him. So it's a matter of if the church can just adopt an attitude where, yes, internally, this is who we are as a people of God, but also to just function externally outside the walls and to do good in their community. If they can, in and out, you got to have both. If you can do both those things, then I think you stay alive. Focus on one or the other, and it's usually inward. That's usually what kills a church. So, Bob, this is kind of a different paradigm here, but I would plead for the church to get out of its membership paradigm, which is kind of a modernist mindset again, membership,
right?
And get into discipleship, because, I can't remember who.
That's not an easy segue. You know that.
No, it's not, because it's, I'll get you back to one of those questions. I think one of the preschoolers asked, we're talking about following Jesus, and they just asked a really good question. How can you follow someone you can't see? You know?
Good question.
Yeah. And I think our parents struggle with discipleship too, because they weren't ever discipled. They were churched. Or they were membered, right? They weren't discipled. So while the church is, you're focused on our connect, membership is about our connection to the church. Discipleship is about our connection to Jesus. And I think if we focus on making disciples, which is exactly what Jesus said to do, all these other issues become secondary and we don't have to worry about, you know, anything else. If we're following Jesus, that's what he wants. So that's a different paradigm shift, but I think actually it's exactly, it's just what Jesus told us to do. And I think it's, we talk about, you know, what these new generations, particularly every generation needs it, but what these newer generations are particularly craving, the answer is right there. It's in being in community with one another, seeking to follow Jesus. That's where it's at. That's authentic. That's real.
Yeah. Well, while I don't think we can all be disciples like the Apostle Paul, after reading through all of the problems that he had, I would think that none of us really want to go through that. But I do see where you're going with this. And yes, I think you're right. You can't just be a member of something. You have to be a contributor. You have to be part of the program. And you are, you yourself are the one who actually goes out and helps create those disciples and brings that discipleship into an organization like your church. Without those people, and there aren't many, believe me, not nowadays. I think you find less and less nowadays than we did back in the 1950s, 60s, or even 70s. I think that if you don't have the people, and it's not so much membership, the amount or the number, it's those that are really geared to being part of the church. And I don't mean just with the offering basket. I mean, they're there every week. They actually do the studying. They spend the time in Bible classes. They are familiar with what religion is really all about. Many of us, many have for years, just thought it was a lot of short stories.
Well, yeah, a little bit more than that. Bob, I'll just put it this way. One of the biggest like aha moments that I've had in my ministry, and I've been a pastor for 21 years, is recognizing that Sunday morning's important, you know, for worship and teaching and good preaching, all of that. We want to have that in place. But discipleship happens not in the large groups. It happens in the smalls. It happens in community, in life on life stuff. There's no way I can disciple. I'm not discipling, you know, 100, 200 people, whoever's there on in a service. I'm teaching, I'm preaching, but discipleship is more in those. It's a two-way street. Just like Jesus, he didn't disciple the crowds. He discipled the 12 and spent time with them. So who has access? Who, if people are listening to this, I would ask them to consider, well, who do I have access to? Who's given me an in to their life that I can speak into them, that I could walk with them? And see, that's what an institution can't do. It doesn't have an in like that, but a person does. So you see, well, discipleship's on that relational level.
Well, you know, I come down every so often to pick up a fresh batch of crosses, wooden crosses that you guys
That's right.
make.
Yep.
And I will tell you that I make sure I give these out to people that I meet every day. And I will also tell you that many have asked me for them. And actually, a couple have said, what church do you belong to? And they said, oh, I'm thinking about going to that church. So please don't tell me that even the smallest thing, like giving a wooden cross to somebody, doesn't make a difference, because I've seen it happen.
Oh, and absolutely does. Yeah.
People need to know that.
Yeah, we've tens of thousands of those crosses, handmade, have gone out. I know this is audio, but I just saw the producer, Mike, hold up his wooden cross that he was wearing. And so it's neat to see. And every one of those comes back with a story, it seems, of they've gone all over the world. It's pretty
neat. It does. And I mean, I've given them out to doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, and even the lady who checks me out at Winco. And that's where I get the most praise from, because thank you, thanks from those people who never expect it. And all of a sudden, wow, oh, that's wonderful. So yeah. Christianity is not dead, believe me.
No, it's not. And, you know, the gates of Hades shall not prevail. The church, as Christ built it, will endure. That's not a promise for institutional, you know, permanence, but that's not what it's about. It's about what Christ built, not what we build. And that's kind of exciting to know that He just asked us to be faithful, and he's bringing everything together. And every generation has its challenges, but God knows what he's doing.
Well, I think we've covered pretty much the gamut of what's going on in religion. And I do appreciate having you spend some time with us today. And maybe we can get you back on in another 6 or 8 months. We'll see where things have gone from the current situation, because things change so rapidly day by day. Now, it's a constantly changing world. And I think you're right about Gen Z. Most of them are living for the moment.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of them are looking that far out, like I used to look out, or you used to look out. What am I going to do with my life?
There's so much pressure on them. That's what I feel like. There's so much pressure. And they're just trying to get by. And amidst that, feeling disconnected. So again, it goes back to that relational community that they can belong. So if we can create it, whatever, if we can make space that's that's what they're looking for.
Well, as I have to say, God bless you.
God bless you, Bob. Great to
spend time with you. Thank you for all you do, and thanks for spending this time here.
Yeah, enjoyable conversation.
Yeah, again, I do appreciate what you do and how you do it. You're not going to get rid of me until the good Lord calls me, so I'll be watching you on the big screen here.
Good. Come down soon. Keep me honest. I'd appreciate that. It'd be great
I will be down there shortly, and I promise I will stop in. We can spend some time together.
All right. Thanks, Bob. God bless.
Thank you.
Time we talk. I know I've been a stranger, and that's all my fault. And asking you for anything don't really seem right. But the winds of change are blowing, so I'm begging you tonight. Give me love when I ain't got no. Give me strength when I'm standing, and faith when I fall, yeah. I know the rain is coming, and it's sure gonna pour. I know there ain't no running from this kind of storm. It's gonna get hot. Gonna wanna quit, so I'll be counting on you to give me love when I ain't got nobody. A little